Move into the open public input. I think you all know that. 3 minutes and the little buzzer goes off. So we have three individuals that wanted to come forward, so I'll call you up two at a time. Tim Anderson and John Andrews, please.
Yes, Anderson.
That's all right, two D's. That's. Yours? Yep.
In March, I testified about the pheasant hunting seasons and the lack of information on the department's website and how the dates over the years have changed. Moving forward, I would like to see the opener become a constant. Using this formula, the Eastside Pheasant opens the first Saturday after the 10th of October. This would allow your customers, the bird hunters, to plan for the coming year. Let's also think outside the box. Have the start time at 10 a.m. the first 2 weeks of the season, similar to what is done in South Dakota, and it works well. Perhaps this would allow for the hunter breakfast to commence again in the rural community. I would differ with the department's statement on rule changing, and I quote, recreational hunting does not affect small businesses. Therefore, a small business impact statement is not needed. Really? Are not motels, restaurants, small businesses, these two service entities are indeed affected by hunters, plus the state as well, on the collection of taxes. My point is not to create another process for the department, but to make the commission aware bird hunters spend money too. Moving forward, make your opening dates for 2018, 19, and 20, and in the spring of 2020, for the next 3 years, keep this process. This allows your customers, hunters, merchants, and landowners to be informed and make plans that affect each group. This, of course, if the commission and the department feels my suggestion, as stated earlier, does not have merit. And the press release for this hearing has stated harsh winter conditions took a toll on populations. I assume this means pheasants, too, but the department allowed hunting until January 16th of this year. Pheasants, too, are out trying to make a living, and putting pressure on birds that time of year does not make sense. End of season on January 1 of every year, I know a number of landowners that do that. I would also suggest a drop-down menu for hunting on the department's website. Click on an area to hunt, game species pop up, seasons, dates, and other pertinent info would then be displayed. Please have the department contact the Washington Farm Bureau. At the very least, the Bureau could be an information conduit to its members. I believe my comments add value, hence I would not have driven from Kent to Spokane if I did not believe so. You, the members of the commission and the department, are here to add value as well. I urge you to add value to our bird hunting seasons, be it opening day, time, and end of season as well. By the way, I just saw today that the 2017 opener for pheasants replicates 2016. It's October 21. It's going to be tough for us going to Whitman County. Pullman has a football game. It's homecoming. Do you think there's any hotel rooms available? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Any? Yes.
Do you know whether there is much pheasant hunting that goes on after January 1st?
You know, I don't know. I'm on the west side. I probably won't do it because you have to pass. You have to pass closures. And a lot of the farmers I know, they take ownership. And they just go, the birds just don't need the pressure. And the season many years ago used to end on the 1st. And if you look at other states, South Dakota, North Dakota, and I'm very lucky to privilege to hunt both those, hunting stops January 1. Because it's tough on animals that time of year. And they don't need pressure. And by pressure, that doesn't mean shooting and harvesting. You walk into a field, and if birds are flushing 200 yards out, you aren't getting a shot. But what are you doing? You're disturbing them.
Thank you.
And on the opening time, I remember growing up in Michigan, it was always 10 o'clock. And that was kind of a magical time. A lot, but as you said, the breakfast stuff before.
The hunter's breakfast, yeah. That we used to have those. Yeah. And it funded the youth programs in the Granges and the Future Farmers of America.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. And it would benefit the rural communities, obviously dollar-wise, but then you start building relationships when you go to the breakfast with the landowners. Oh, yeah, Tim, he's not a bad guy. Yeah, you want a place to hunt?
Good point. Thank you. Yes.
On the opening days, because there again, my father was a very avid bird hunter, and we did that all the time I was growing up. And my part of the world, we hunted chuckers. And like you said, it was one of those things that when the calendar come out, you could look at it and you go, oh, there's opening day of chucker season right there. So that isn't the way it is anymore, I take it.
No, I can't even today, right now, and when I testified in March, I could not find out when the opener was for 2017. The young lady sitting behind you, she has a publication, and I saw it today in writing for the first time. And that's why I made the comment about Pullman. I hunt Whitman County. You aren't going to be able, they're booked. They're already booked, okay, for hotels. In moving forward, people like to plan ahead.
Well, and even in that vein, didn't pheasant season used to open on noon of opening?
Used to be noon on opening the first day. Saturday after the 10th of October.
Yeah, because that would coincide with deer season.
Right, and it worked great for years, you know. And this goes back to the hunter's breakfast. The bird hunters that go to the hunter's breakfast in the morning, because it opened at noon, all right, because the deer hunters are out there already. Then the noon comes around, the guys start going out to the field. Well, the deer hunters are coming back in from their deer hunting. Then they go to the hunter's breakfast. So it was a win-win for those rural communities.
Why have they changed it? Did they tell you?
I have my own opinion, and I just soon keep it to myself.
Okay.
I shared it a little bit with an employee with the department that the director directed her to contact me. And I just didn't keep it that way. I'm here, like I said, to add some value, and I'm here to facilitate some change. Okay, and that's what I would like to see moving forward. It's not going to happen this year, that's fine. But moving forward, let's do that.
Well, personally, I have to give some merit to what this man's saying, because it's just, there again, I can pick up a calendar in January and tell you a pretty good idea when deer season's going to open in our because it's a big deal. But I can see his sense his frustration and see why he is.
I'm going to participate. It's the lack of being able to plan that drives me nuts.
So how late in the year, you say today you still can't even tell when opening?
No, I found out today.
Okay.
I found out today, but I went to the website last night and I couldn't find it.
But, I mean, we're talking April before you can make any.
Well, yeah. No, I should be able to know a year in advance.
Total agreement with you, but I'm just trying to make certain that I understand that it was up until basically now before you knew when you could.
That's
not.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
And Commissioner Duvier, please. And John, it's up to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is John Andrews. I'm testifying today in support of a potential future rule that would ban the use of baiting for deer and elk. I know rules and restrictions allowing the use of bait were passed last year by the Commission. I testified in favor of a ban. My purpose today is to keep this issue in our collective conscious. I know baiting won't be banned this year, but maybe someday if some of you change your mind or new commissioners have a different perspective. My concerns and comments are about primarily the whitetail country of northeastern Washington, where baiting is widespread, and whitetail, who are more easily baited than mule deer and elk, are plentiful and easily baited with small amounts of bait. Baiting of deer and elk is illegal in the western states of Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, and it's legal in Utah, Oregon, and Washington. In Washington, it is illegal to bait all game birds, waterfowl, and bear. I called most of the states with a ban on deer and elk baiting and asked why is it illegal. In every case, the answer was a strong response. It was about fair chase. Other comments usually included concerns about disease and predation and concerns about the health of deer and elk switching from natural to artificial foods. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife feeding guidelines say, among other things, we generally discourage citizens from feeding deer and elk and other wildlife species because of the potential for harm. It also says concentrating deer and elk at a feeder can create problems by making animals more vulnerable to disease, predation, and poaching. And I'm paraphrasing a concern stated in that release that digestive systems of deer and elk do not have the gut microbes needed to break down many of the artificial foods. In a random survey of deer and elk hunters for last year's commission meeting, 59% of deer hunters opposed baiting, while only 21% supported. A similar survey of elk hunters had 68% opposed and only 14% supporting. Last year, you received testimony for baiting from individuals from the senior disabled youth archery and rifle hunters groups. If baiting is ever banned, these individuals can still hunt and be successful as they are in other states, but it just won't be as easy. If harvest rates decline for any of these groups, you could compensate by providing more opportunity to any or all of these groups. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. Although I disagree with you on the baiting issue, I appreciate all your work.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. Questions, comments from the commission?
Yes. Thank you very much. Whoa, that's loud. I'd like to just made me think about encouraging maybe our report from enforcement staff, and I can put together a blue sheet or whatever, but I think it'd be really good to have a report on how that first year of enforcement went with the baiting out in the communities. I know I've talked to some of our folks where I live, and they said it was not easy, but you know, I'd really like to see how it went, what were the effects, you know, something along those lines, and maybe throw in on top of that a little report on the salvage bill, which we also passed about the same time, because I've been hearing in the news good things about that, but I'd just like to hear, and primarily from enforcement, you know, how it's going. So
it's a good idea.
I might just comment to Jay, Commissioner. I had the opportunity to talk to one of the primary proponents of baiting, and the adjustment, although difficult, was satisfactory. And so I was pleased to hear that. I expected a big pushback after last season, but the comments I got were that it was a reasonable approach, and they adapted and were successful. So it was a positive move, I think.
I think having an update would be
beneficial.
For any other? Thank you, Mr. Andrews. And Dale Margat, please. Gary, good to see you, buddy.
Well, good morning. Nice to be here, Chairman and Commissioners, Director. I'd like to take just a moment to talk about something I worked on when I was on that side of the desk. I was part of two committees, the delegation from the commission to work with Oregon on the Lower Columbia Plan. And we had three representatives from Washington and three from Oregon. I know that policy is still a little bit contentious and changing, but I'd like to bring you a key part of that is the revenue side. When I initially started, it was supposed to only be there to protect wild fish was the purpose. The secondary purpose was to make sure it was revenue positive to both states. And part of that balancing was mainly to try to allocate all the different runs in the lower river and to provide for an upriver fishery, which we haven't done a very good job of in the past. The key to the revenue side was to take the summer run and the steelhead and get their fair share back up to eastern and central Washington as well as into Idaho. Rarely in the past have the quota set for the upper river been achieved. It's usually overfished by the commercials or the wrecks in the lower part of the river. But to obtain the fishing we need to increase more opportunity for take. If you fish down there in the Astoria for springers or the falls, that's combat fishing now. There's no more room down there for more fishermen. So if you want to increase your revenues, you got to provide the take opportunities to get the river up. Fish up river. So the Brewster Pool has got one little boat launch that's probably 2 to 3 hours to get into. Wells Dam has got you got to have a four-wheel drive and a awfully strong trailer to get through the rocks to get your boat in. Down in Tri-Cities, limited access. Lewiston, Clarkton, limited access. But if, particularly on the summer-run Chinook, which is an upriver fish, and it's only harvested in a lower river when the water is warmer, your mortality rate is much higher, and your bycatch is significant on the steelhead. So by backing off the summer-run Chinook, you not get them upriver, and you get a lot more steelhead upriver to get there. And you got a particular problem this year with the B-run steelhead in the fall. I think it's like 1,100 fish. There should be no gill netting at all on that lower river until those fish get upstream. You can't afford to lose one of them. And so the purpose to get your revenue, which you guys seem to be a little short of, is to provide more opportunity and more take. And to do that, you got to be able to fish. For probably 15, 18 years, I've gone to Astoria to fish. Will not go anymore. The last time I was there, it was 3.5 hours to get my boat in. And when I got out there, there wasn't a boat. Anytime I got a fish, there was at least two boats within 10 feet of me. So if we can get to the Caldwell's Tribes Hatchery and the Joint Treasury to get that summer run Chinook start to return, which it should be about this year, and we allow the normal fish to come upriver, you'll start having all the fishermen from the west side will follow the fish, just like we do in eastern Washington. So it's an opportunity. If you want more revenue, you got to get more fishing license sold. You don't need to raise the price. If you provide the fish an opportunity to take them, you'll have all the license sales you want. But it's getting too hard, too difficult, and too poor results to go to clear to the western side to get salmon fishing. So it's important that we keep looking at the value. It's not a question of allocation. It's a question of protecting the wild fish. You got about 162 gill netters in the state. Most of them, if not all of them, make their money somewhere else. Their average takes about $6,900. They all go to Alaska or somewhere else, or they all have other fish licenses to make their living. They fish on an average 19 days. So it's not a matter of providing allocation to support that. There's plenty of ways to do that. We have to do a better job of getting the tribes, the recs, and the commercials to stay off the wild fish.
Thank you, Gary. Any questions for Commissioner Dubier? Ken, good to see you, sir.
Thank you.
And Mr. Margat, you have the last word of this part of the agenda.
I'd just like to talk predators for a little bit here. As you're aware, we've had a pretty severe winter up north here. I don't know whether it's the most severe we've ever had, but I can attest right there at my place, and I'm just north of town here, about 15 miles. In the past, last year, I had 7 to 9 does and yearlings coming through every day. This year, I'm down to 2. And the 7 to 9 are down from a top of 15, 16, 17 that I had 20 years ago there. The 2 that are there now are there because the day before there were 3, and that night my wife heard the coyotes just going nuts, and I haven't seen any more deer since. Most of the deer that are at my place come down here in winter on the river, down here at Suncrest. They schmuck the heck out of them on the highways down there. The dogs are a problem, so on and so forth. If we don't do something, we've got cougars in town. Last week there was a cougar in town here. Last fall there was a guy shot one in the middle of the night, didn't know what he was shooting, over by Kashmir somewhere. You know, the lights, the dog was going nuts. He shines his flashlight and shoots his cat. I don't know whether I like shooting things in the middle of the night, you know, but that's going to happen increasingly more and more if we don't get a handle on this. I don't think the department is aware of the numbers that we have out there. My cousin John can't be here today. He works North 40 up there. He's hearing more and more people say they're seeing more and more cats, more and more bears, and also he's hearing a number of things, people commenting that we're not buying a hunting license this year. Now, Gary's talking about, you know, selling more licenses, and you're losing a resource up north here in northeast Washington. We've got coyotes, we've got bears, we've got cougars, and of course we got the wolves. Can't do much with the wolves, but we need to start doing something about the take on the bears and the cougars and the coyotes. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Yes, Barbara.
So you said that people weren't going to be buying hunting licenses this year. Why not?
Because the take is going to be down. They're seeing it up there, and I drove through an area up there that when I was a kid growing up, we had a bad winter. You'd go over there on the south slope north of Wright's Mountain, and in 20 to 30 minutes, you could probably count a couple hundred deer up there. I was over there this spring, and we saw about 20. So, you know, the blue tongue hit us real hard a couple of years ago. You took away the four-point restriction and hammered them up there a little bit that year. Not as much as actually they thought, because the blue tongue took quite a take. And now we had a winter. So with all of it said and done, we're not seeing the deer up there. So why does somebody want to spend $100 just for the licensing and stuff and go out there and see nothing? So the shelves are starting to empty up there, folks. So.
Are you sticking around this afternoon when we're talking about seasons and that, Dale?
Till after lunch sometime, yes.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make certain that if you were going to weigh in on any of that. And I can't agree with you more. And there again, we got nailed with the blue tongue on the whitetail down there, and then this winter was terrible on mule deer. It was just sad. Granted, we both know that deer are prolific. They will rebound. But it's just what he's saying, that we got to give them a little bit of a break now and again, because there's just more and more pressure. We have more and more people, and we still want to keep people hunting. And part of it is, just like he says, well, probably not going to buy a license this year as much as anything, just to give the resource a break. You know, right. We all enjoy, and you'll probably still go out looking for them because we enjoy seeing them. But it's just, you know, well, I maybe need to do my part and not whack one this year. So I just...
I agree with what you're saying there, and I know they're a prolific animal, and they rebound rapidly. But are you aware that our fawn to doe ratio up there last year was 35 fawns per 100 does? And, you know, in a perfect world, that might be okay. But not when we've got the issues that we have up there. It's not sustainable. It cannot increase.
You know? Well, and there again, after you guys had just as bad a winter as we did, and it was tough on them. And that's, no, I'm in total agreement. And trust me, Dale, I visit with Miranda on a regular basis, and I'm not going to say every time, but almost every time that her and I talk, you and Al and Freddie's name get mentioned, because you guys have just been amazing to keep coming to this and pushing.
Trying. I was going to start this by saying, you know, this may sound kind of like you've heard it before, but yeah.
No, and I don't mean it that way, but I guess I'm kind of, you beat your spoon on the high chair long enough, you hope to Christ somebody's going to listen to you sooner or later.
Hope so.
So... No, I just need to commend you guys for what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And that brings an end to the open public input part for this morning.